Welcome back to Coach's Corner, the relocated Coach's Corner, coming to you from Oklahoma. And I've got my boy Slim Shady with me again, and we're talking playoffs. Only playoffs. Why? Because it's the playoffs. Everything else is over. We'll talk a little bit about the SFLM, about week one, just kind of some brief overview. But mostly it's about the playoffs. How you doing, man?
I'm good. I feel
congratulations. Congratulations, by the way. First playoff win in franchise history. Your first playoff win. There's a lot of firsts. This is pretty cool.
Firsts are always good as well. Always, yeah. I quite like a first.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know, I was really nervous before that game, and I think the nerves have settled a bit.
Okay.
You know, they're still there. You want to go as far as you can, but
of course, yeah.
I think with that game, I was worried that St. Louis would, well, I guess I don't want to say put up more of a challenge than they did in the first game, because in both games they put up a massive challenge. Mm-hmm. But just make it really uncomfortably close. And for a long time, it was uncomfortably close. Mm-hmm. That the scoreline, I don't think, reflects how close it was. Or so it felt in our locker room anyway. We had a video chat going on, and everyone's faces at like the fourth quarter, between the third and the fourth quarter, we were just, no one was really talking much. Everyone was just tense. I've never seen Scott Johnson look so tense. Oh my days.
Wow.
It was a good job he did that interview a few days before, because, or a few hours before, because I don't think he minded me saying that he was a very quiet, pensive looking man at that point. I think he finally relaxed when it was about 3 seconds left on the clock and we knew we were going to win. But yeah, it was just a great weekend. I think the whole wild card weekend has been great, but it was to be the first game and to get it over and done with and not have to worry as well for the next couple of days was just, it was just a great feeling. And I'm just glad that, you know, all the hard work that we've put in is coming together. Same for you guys, obviously, over in Lone Star.
Right. Yeah, but like we were talking about last week, for you guys to have, you know, you start out two wins and you have four losses and then you go on that mm-hmm. run, there's something pretty epic about that run. I mean, hey, we had our own drama, obviously. When Ike went out, I thought, oh boy, we got problems now. You know, and then for her to come back, she comes back and gets two big runs and just kind of, I was just like, that's like fairy tale stuff almost. That was pretty fun.
Rise like Lazarus, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, that was cool. I did enjoy that. Your game was apart from the Fort Worth game, all the games were pretty exciting and close. Mm-hmm. And your game was just. I know we'll go on to more detail later on, but just as a brief, it just seemed like Jacksonville were daring you to win, and you just took the dare and said, "All right, we will," and knocked them out of the playoffs again. Jacksonville, get to the playoffs every season, and then it just falls apart.
Yeah, it is pretty strange in that regard. And, certainly there's an element of bad luck that happens in those things. I think if you'd have told them going in that they were going to get three turnovers off of us, it looked like they were going to boat race us early.
I'm saying,
this is going to be bad.
And yeah.
Then. I think when Yogi got that safety was when things, I mean, if we were still behind, but Yogi got that safety, and you sometimes have a feel, you're like, okay, we've got a shot here. You know, if the right things happen, it still mm-hmm. played with our emotions. But I think when he got that safety, I thought, okay, this isn't over. And up until that point, I kind of thought it was over.
Well, I mean, football is a game of momentum, much like most sports. And for whatever reason, as much as it's a video game, I just feel like there's some kind of momentum model in there.
It feels like it, certainly.
The game can kind of like calculate that it's going particularly well for a team, but then they can have momentum change in plays. Mm-hmm. We, in our game against St. Louis, it was very close, very tentative, and then there was that huge bomb of a pass from Pierce to Kirby, which... I've only ever seen that animation that Pierce did on a Hail Mary. So,
right,
that was just absolutely crazy. And then that one play, Well, we could feel it in our locker room. It just changed the momentum of the game.
It did.
And it kind of got away from St. Louis from that point. Again, St. Louis played really well.
Mm-hmm.
Cannot knock how well St. Louis played. They made it really tough. And for a long time, I wasn't sure about whether we were going to pull that out.
Yeah.
There were certain things like we caused a fumble off a punt, which they recovered. And I was thinking, oh, you know, we recover that. We're in field goal position already. There was a couple of penalties that that got turned over. We got an interception again that got chalked off due to a roughing the passer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I was at that point, I was just like, oh. Because bless him, Rhett Sawyer, as much as he's been an absolute servant to Vegas in all the best ways over the last couple of seasons, he didn't have the best game.
Mm-hmm.
In that first half, at least. And these unlucky things kept happening too. And I couldn't really understand how we were ahead of St. Louis. It looked for all money that St. Louis should have been the ones ahead at halftime, but the halftime adjustments came in and that big play happened, which got everyone excited. And then we just managed to push on in the fourth and do the exact opposite to what we did against Denver, which is not let St. Louis back in the game.
Yeah. And there was that feel. I had a little bit of a feel. I was like, oh, this might go like Denver. You know, you just had that just a little bit. And then you hit that bomb and it's like, maybe not.
In this, there always is in this league, though, isn't there? You never quite know in the SFL what's going to happen. You could be 14, 20 points up with 6 minutes left and two quick long touchdowns. Boom, they're back in the game.
Yep.
So, I mean, you guys know full well you've been on the other side where you've come back against the odds in week 11 and 12,
mm-hmm.
Especially against Queen City. Mm-hmm. That was.
Oh, yeah, we were done. We should have been done.
Yeah, coach was off making a coffee. He was just like, "No, I'm not watching any more of this."
Like, just run whatever. Just do whatever you want.
How do you assess the Lone Star performance against Jacksonville? Do you think that it was a complete performance? Do you think that there were things to be improved on? Do you think that it was just playoff football and anything could happen?
Well, there's a lot of that. Yeah, I went back and watched it again, and it felt like. You know, at one point, I think even one of the announcers was like, Ike's average came up, and you're like, wow, we really need to be giving it to Ike more. And then she ended up with a very solid mm-hmm. game. When I went back and watched it again, it didn't feel as bad as it did in the time. I'm so anti-turnover. And so when Ace's first pass is a turnover, like, and then like the second, I mean, again, and this is like Queen City, he threw three passes and had three interceptions at Queen City. And it looked like it was going to start exactly the same way. When I went back and looked, the offense wasn't actually that bad. You take away the turnovers, it's pretty efficient, but the big takeaway is for me is that the defense was repeatedly in bad situations and just, they had to throw the ball 50 times to get the yards they got.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Jared Willis, who's no joke as a running back. He is a heck of a running back. We held him like 20 some yards. I don't know how much it was.
22.
Did a fantastic job with him. 1.9 yard per carry, I think, was his average.
1.2.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Hey, numbers. I'm a history guy, and I've had concussions. I'm not good with numbers.
I mean, I've got the stats in front of me now, so
okay.
So I can't claim credit. I've memorized it.
You can correct. Go for it. I'd tell people you memorized it. So yeah, you look at those things, and then suddenly our game doesn't look that bad for a game that we won. But you're going to have those things. Jacksonville. I was worried for a stretch there. They were hitting out routes on us, and I was like, "Boy, I hope they don't keep doing that." And they didn't do it just enough. You know, we got some of those over the middle, and Evan got a nice interception. Bo got a nice interception. Some jerk weasel at linebacker got a nice interception and returned it for a touchdown. Craven. And then Doug got one. You know, I think almost everybody got an interception. and like you said, it was like they were daring us to win it. Like I said, in hindsight, I'm getting kind of too wordy about this. In hindsight, the offense looked better than it felt like at the time. Ike certainly had a fantastic game. You know, and interceptions are going to happen once in a while. And so, you know, I don't think we can do that against Baltimore. I think that many turnovers against Baltimore is going to be too many. But, you know.
It's interesting that if you didn't watch this game, which some people obviously won't have done, you look at the team stats and you think, how did Lone Star won this game? Because you look at first downs, the yardage, all those third down percentage, you know, it just looks like it should be the other way around.
Even time of possession, right? They had better time of possession.
But all it does when you've watched the game, all it does is illustrate just how good if Lone Star's starting field position was. If the stats on the websites recorded the average starting field position, I imagine Lone Star's would be much more healthy than Jacksonville's, because I mean, they had double your first downs. You only had 10 first downs in the whole game. But you only needed 10 first downs in the whole game, because the yardage you were needed to make up was never, well, sometimes it was, you know, a longer drive, but it was never on average that much. You were finding yourselves in starting drives in really advantageous positions, and it just all comes down to those turnovers. I think if, and this is obviously a fairly obvious if, but Jacksonville makes three less, say Jacksonville and Lone Star both made three turnovers, I think Jacksonville wins.
I agree. Well, and I remember them saying at one point we were 0-for on third down conversions. You know, we weren't
25% you got in the end.
Yeah, see, so I agree with you. Heck, maybe even one less turnover, just the timing of the turnovers. It wasn't just the turnovers, it was the timing of them that was so brutal for Jacksonville. So,
but because it kind of sounds like I'm trying to discredit Lone Star's victory, and I'm not, because at the end of the day, football's a team game. Your secondary absolutely balled out, along with Christian Christensen throwing too many times. In playoff football, that nothing matters other than the win. The win is the only thing that matters. In most of the football calendar, the win is what matters pretty much. But I feel like within the regular season, your performance matters as well, because you can sort of build momentum and stuff. And, you know, you can go on like we did. We went on a big run. Whereas in playoff football, it's knockout football. You could play the worst game ever. Your quarterback could have a terrible game, throw one touchdown to seven interceptions. And if you win by a point, it doesn't matter. Because you're through and the other team aren't. And that's that. So
you're still standing and they aren't. So
the only thing you need to make sure that happens is that you learn and adapt for the next game against the next opponent, who in theory would be a tougher out than. And the fact that you're on the road next week as well.
Right.
That will play an effect, sure.
And we already have a loss to them. You know, one of our losses came to them. Pretty close game, reasonably close game, but that is a game. That's an example of what you're talking about. We had a fair number of turnovers in that game, and weren't in a position to capitalize on any mistakes they made. I don't remember how many turnovers they had. They didn't have six. I know that much. So,
I mean, they have suffered with turnover bug a bit, and their running game with T-Roy has struggled. But well, I don't know. I feel like they just haven't used him very much.
No, I agree. You know, they've done a lot of
it's gone a lot of the pass.
Yeah, and they've gone a little bit of that that old West Coast offense the 49ers were famous for, you know, where they didn't really have a strong running game, but the quick pass was like a long handoff is what they said. And it should feel like Baltimore does that quite a bit.
The weird thing is, because I know we were going to potentially preview the games further on, but we might as well do it now. Because you know our show structure is a bit all over the place. We just like to throw thoughts out there, and it all comes together.
It's magic, not science. It's magic, not
I've heard sort of whispers of, you know, it's a great matchup for Lone Star because they've got such a good rush defense against Baltimore's poor rushing offense. But to me, that's kind of, that's missing the point. That Lone Star's rush defense being good doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. Because if against most teams, Baltimore's rushing offense is poor, mm-hmm. then it doesn't really matter how good Lone Star, it's about how good Lone Star do against the pass and mm-hmm. limit Baltimore's scoring and can score on Baltimore. That's the thing that matters most. Your rush defense would only matter, sort of be take precedence if you were going against the likes of Denver or a team that rushed the ball really well. Because Baltimore, whilst having a slightly one-dimensional offense, which is very rare for them, we always talked about Baltimore's balance being their bit main strength. While at the minute they're very imbalanced, they still won. They've still been winning. They're still 8-4. I think they've still got an 8-4 record.
Well, and they're still a very efficient team. Yes, they're throwing a few more interceptions mm-hmm. than last season, but they're still a very efficient team. And so I'm with you. It's like, okay, you're not very good at running, or you don't feature the running game, however you want to put it.
Yeah, I feel like if they wanted to be good at running, they probably could.
it's not that big of a thing. I'm not that concerned. As good as their offense can be, I'm more concerned about how effective our offense is against their defense, because that was mm-hmm. we never got a rhythm going the last time. A couple of their players had fantastic games against us. One of their linebackers was all over the place.
Yeah, you struggled against Jacksonville's safeties, who were both very good, and they've got Troy Loshaw who's having in.
Oh yeah, that's right.
A fantastic season.
Yeah. Exactly.
I feel like that's a game much like the Jacksonville Lone Star. Probably maybe not as many, but I feel like there's a turnover or two in that game. Mm-hmm. Definitely. I think if there was two turnovers per side, that'd be probably about average just the way that both teams play the game. And I don't know. Like, we'll make. I feel like we should make official predictions a bit later on about who's going to win.
Okay.
And stuff.
Okay.
Kind of Axe's lifestyle.
There we go.
But it's that of all the four games that are coming up, that's probably the tightest one for me. That's the one that I think will be the craziest and the tightest game.
I can see that. I think we're the closest in, I don't know. Sometimes it's a matter of styles and how the styles match mm-hmm. up. And I think our two mm-hmm. styles are going to contribute to friction and possibly what people would call ugly football, but it could be that.
It's all beautiful if you're winning.
I agree. Well, and I like ugly football. I like a grinded out battle.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of like it. So
someone's got to, aren't they?
I'm here for it. I don't like, you know, bomb 80-yard touchdown, sweet. 80-yard touchdown the other way, sweet. You know, the end of the game, they've scored 100 points. I don't enjoy those very much.
Mm-hmm. So, there's something to be said for good defensive play. There's something to be said for that. There's something to be said for that pure battle of will in the trenches. Mm-hmm. Mano, al mano, whatever the phrase is.
Yep.
That's what the game is built on.
Yeah.
You can have as many diva moments, as many fancy plays, as many blockbuster plays as you want, but at the end of the day, you don't get to that without the grit and determination of those guys who are in the trenches doing every play.
Mm-hmm. And it goes back to what you've heard me say more than once. I feel like there are some teams need to treat this like 1970s football, and they mm-hmm. need to be okay with 3 yards, 4 yards, 3 yards, 5 yards, you know, rather than having to have 25 yards at a time. If they do that, they're going to throw fewer mm-hmm. interceptions, give the other offense fewer opportunities. So
I think that's where I mean, in Vegas, we're still a big play offense by all means. I mean, Mason Kirby's average was 44.5 in terms of average yards per reception in the game in the wild card game.
That's just crazy. It's so good.
Yeah, but at the start of the season, we were even more aggressive, and there was some kind of stat where they said during the broadcast where in the first half of the season when we went 2-4, we turned the ball over 22 times. Mm. And then the credit to the ownership and the coaching changed it, dialed it back, went to more of that, I guess, sort of 1970s style that you're talking about. And not fully, because we're still one of the biggest kind of like, I guess, big play offenses in the league, but dialed it back a bit, and we had 9 turnovers in the final 6 games, 3 of them coming against Denver. So before that, we had 1 turnover per game, which in this league is pretty good.
It is, yeah.
So in lo and behold, we started winning games. So I think you are onto something there, where you talk about just being okay with taking three downs to get 10 yards, mm-hmm. and trusting that you can do it.
I figure if I can do that, and I'm patient doing that, I'm willing to do that, I hold on to the ball and I don't give you as many opportunities. And if I can score every time I have the ball, even if I have the ball a few fewer times, but I can score every time. And then if you don't have the same philosophy, you're going to take risk. And if I get a couple of turnovers, then I get an extra possession. And that's the way I've always kind of looked at that a little bit.
Mm. And then if you get that extra possession and take 6 minutes off the clock, score a touchdown, then
for me,
you
know, yep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, jobs are good. Speaking of ugly football, that game got a bit ugly between Fort Worth and LA.
Yes, it did. I think we both, I can admit, I didn't watch that with as much. I did early. But it pretty quickly was like, okay, this is where the momentum is today. ain't nobody stopping Thrillium today.
he does have those sort of standout performances, which are then coupled with he's barely even noticed,
right?
Because he's not. I think. He's got a lack of consistency, put it that way. One in this game, it looked better than McChesney. He looked like the best running back in the league, whereas the next game, he might get 20 yards on 10 carries. Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to attribute to that either. It's very strange.
Yeah, it's strange. But yeah, I mean, good for him and good for Fort Worth, really. I mean, their offense has come alive this last sort of like 4 or 5 weeks.
Oh yeah. Well, and I enjoyed, I said at the beginning, I was going to be enjoy looking forward. There are a couple of teams that embraced that, two back, fullback, running back, two tight end, two wide receiver, ethos, if you will. And mm-hmm. I think that, I feel like Fort Worth did the best with it. Their offense struggled a little early, but they had to get some people progressed and get things going. And as they got comfortable with it, it creates problems that not every team does, and I think they're going to be a tough out for whoever they're playing in the playoffs.
Oh yeah, I mean, the defense is, since even last season, the defense has always been
fantastic
in the top. At least in the top half, anyway. And this season, probably in the top 1 or 2. When I did that article on pass defense, theirs was by far the best by it.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Mile.
Yeah. By a country mile. I'm pretty sure when we beat them in week 8, we were the first team to ever get more than 30 points on them in that season so far. So they're going to be a very tough. Vancouver are going to find that a tough game.
That's that old classic immovable object.
Yes.
Unstoppable force against an immovable object type of game. Mm-hmm. Going to be very fast.
Part of the reason why I said that the Baltimore Lone Star game would be closer is because I feel like with Vancouver or Fort Worth will show up and thrash Vancouver. Vancouver will show up and thrash Fort Worth. I can't see there being much in between. I just feel like one team is going to win big by 10 or more points. I just can't see there being a kind of, you know, 2 points or less outcome between them. I just can't.
Yeah, it feels like, and this is the story with Vancouver, right? If they don't have the turnovers, you know they're going to score points in bunches, but if the turnovers happen, then their offense is significantly hampered, and that's when Fort Worth gets to run Williams more and gets to I follow your logic completely. I think it's very good. They could surprise us. You know, we could have mm-hmm. a 17-14. We could have a 48-45. But it feels like the winner, what they do, if it works, is going to pay off. And if Fort Worth can't stop Vancouver, if they can't stop Kendra, can't stop Brett Killian, can't do that. If they can pick off Pepper, Redford is good too. I mean, you got all kinds of stuff. If they can't do that, then Vancouver just goes. I can't.
If it was a battle of, I know Fort Worth had that crazy game with Lone Star, but if it's a offense versus offense, like haymaker battle, then I'm afraid I think Vancouver would win. If it's a more of a slow grinding, you have to work for every yard kind of game, then I think mm-hmm. I can see Fort Worth causing the upset. Yep. How do you assess LA's first season as a group?
Their season? I think it's a good season. I think they've got a good foundation there. I remember my early on, either on Dave's show or my preseason hype show, I said I thought they might struggle a little bit on offense because they didn't have as many pieces there. I thought it was going to be, you know, Sully throwing swing passes to the running back. Mm-hmm. It kind of was, but they were very effective. They did a pretty good job with that. Defense was fine.
The offense was, I think that at the end of the season, their points per game was fairly low, and they Sully threw a absolute ton of interceptions.
Yeah.
I think that got worse towards the end of the season.
I think you're right.
It's a weird feeling for LA because they've kind of ended on a bit of a whimper. You know, they've scraped into the playoffs despite losing in week 12. It's kind of easy to forget that week 12 game was for the division.
Right.
That was a division winning game against Vancouver, and Vancouver ended up winning. Right. And we think about how our perception is of Vancouver and our feelings towards them mm-hmm. are that they are getting onto the knockings of a powerhouse team. Mm-hmm. And yet they were fighting for the division until week 12 with LA, who now we're kind of thinking, oh, was it really that good of a season?
Right.
You know, I think we need to sort of take stock and think that, you know what, LA's season actually was, it was better than we're feeling now about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to be down on a season when you spend the last two games losing,
mm-hmm.
Especially in the fashion that they did. They didn't, you know, really put much of a fight in either of those two games. But when you think about the fact that Portland have improved massively, they've beaten them in the division. The fact that they've gone 6-6, but they've made the playoffs in the first attempt. The fact that they've had to bring together some players and try and get players who weren't too disgruntled from Chicago to come and join, to stay with them. Some players from Carolina, a couple of players from Vegas. And they've all gelled together. They've gelled together pretty well. And I think, you know, I can attest to this. It's tough to make the playoffs in this league. And they've done it on their first try. So I think you can't say that it wasn't a successful season.
Agreed. Yeah, I agree. And they have the opportunity. I'm sure they're going to retain most of their players, have the opportunity to develop that progression, mm-hmm. that cohesiveness. Mm-hmm. They're in good shape. You mentioned Portland, and I feel like Portland's closer than a lot of people think. I noticed Matt Smouth. I don't know if Matt got released or if Matt left on his own accord.
I think it's a bit of an uncertain situation at the minute. I think, if, I mean, obviously I've given my sort of opinion fairly clearly that if I was Portland, I'd go for a rookie straight away. I think Matt coming back when he did didn't help his build very much, and I think he went to Portland, and I think they were still trying to figure out the best way to build a QB. I think they probably tried to be a bit different when they built him as well, to try something more of an alternative take on things, and it's kind of come back to bite them a little bit. And they're probably thinking that we've got the running game sorted. Ezekiel Love's had a great season. Mm-hmm. Offensive rookie of the year contender easily. They would want a quarterback who can at least be an average starting QB, which a lot of these teams in the playoffs now, their QB has been fairly, in terms of QBR across the league, fairly average. Mm-hmm. But they still made it because other parts of the game are so strong. So just the defense is really strong. The running game's strong now. I wouldn't take Pickler. I wouldn't touch him. I think he's probably got his sights with, I don't want to say larger fish, but
we know where he's going. But
somewhere that would be seen as more of a glamorous place.
We know where he's going. We know.
I'd look at the teams that have had rookies this year. So it was in Vegas. We've made the quarterfinals. St. Louis played against us with a rookie QB in the wildcard game. And then the other rookie QB, JQ, Tulsa and St. Louis, week 12, fighting for that playoff place in the division win. So it's not been an unsuccessful season for any of those quarterbacks. So any of these teams that are going to be without a quarterback in the offseason, or any that have got one, think maybe they're a bit over the hill now. Take the plunge. I'd recommend getting a rookie, especially if they're keen and young and hungry.
Well, and there's another piece to this. Dougie and I were talking about this the other day. Ace has just completed his second season, right? And the minors were different than the way they came in. We've been progressing him. We got him quick release. Mm-hmm. Just think that's essential. But other than that, it's been accuracy, arm strength. It's been the relevant attributes.
Yes.
He's still not at max on those attributes on a couple of them. He's close. Yeah. He's close. He's nearly done. Pickler has been in the league a season longer than Ace. Mm-hmm. Still not max on the relevant attributes. Quarterback coming in are max on the relevant attributes. I'm going to say publicly for the first time that I think the progression needs to be reevaluated for the rookies, because you don't even have to do two full seasons and you're already at the point where when you come in, you're just ready for animations,
at the end of the day, if you look at the progression model as it is, that was built before the SFLM was built.
Yeah.
That was built in season 10.
Yeah.
And I know it's been adapted slightly. And to be honest, when rookies were first told, yes, you can get past base silver level, you can get past that level,
which
I liked that. I thought it was more incentive to get them to stay. It meant they were more prepared to come into the league. It needs some kind of revamping, because you're just going to get these overloaded rookies that have stayed in the SFLM for two seasons, and they're going to be, and to be honest, it's not been a problem because a lot of the positions are quite interchangeable. So there's been a lot of turnover at those positions. So linebacker, safety, corner, defensive end, a lot of these positions, players get drafted because they're needed. Yep. Whereas a quarterback and a running back, there's been so few of them drafted that this is where we've run into the problem, that they've stayed in the SFLM for two seasons. And I mean, I guess the fact that they have to retrain at a new position after two seasons helps slightly with not becoming, but if the fact that that JQ after two seasons was already maxed out in his attributes. And to be honest, I'm not even convinced that maxing every attribute out is a good thing. I feel like there's a sweet spot balance somewhere where, having max accuracy, max pack strength, max read coverage, max composure, max consistency, all that, which sounds like a great thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's just something about, I mean, there's theories out there that I've heard where if you decrease pass strength a little bit, it affects your throw in a positive sense. Mm. Because it's less, less of an arrow kind of where, you know, like the QBs go deep and they throw these low throws that reach, but they get picked. There's theories out there about that as well. So,
well, I know in real life I've had to tell quarterbacks with strong arms, I'm like, put a little touch on that thing, dude. What are you doing? You know, mm-hmm. quit trying to throw a frozen rope 30 yards. What are you doing? That could be, and I've heard, for example, that composure, if it's maxed, you take more sacks. I've heard that theory. Mm-hmm. So you may be onto mm-hmm. something about that. I don't get the sense that like max speed and scrambling on a quarterback makes them run more.
There's one person who I think JQ's got that because they were the only things mm-hmm. he could progress, and I'm not entirely sure whether he. I mean, I'd have to watch more Tulsa games to realize whether he actually ran more or not.
Yeah. I mean, I remember feeling like, I remember when Ace and I were talking about his build, he asked about speed, and I was like, I don't want you running. If you're running, something went wrong. I want you throwing the ball away. You
know? Yeah. So. And the thing is, like, I think with those two attributes as well, I think within the pocket, they all move at a similar speed anyway. Mm-hmm. I think it's when they get into the running animations that the speed only sort of take shape, and even the max speed for that is JQ's speed is 80. That's slower than me, so
right.
You know, you're not going to get around in the linebackers.
No.
But anyway, we're getting off on a bit of a tangent.
Well, yeah, no, it's fine. That's what we do. It's magic, not science. But I know I'm with you. We were talking originally about LA and their season, and you know what Portland's going to do. They've got Portland nipping at their heels. I'm sorry, I don't think Vancouver, I don't think San Diego's going to be nipping at anyone's heels for a little while.
No,
they've got some things to fix. Not to say they can't, but they've got some things to fix. But mm-hmm. But that division suddenly doesn't look as good as Vancouver is. It's not a shoe-in for them next season if the other two teams do the right thing.
No, and to be honest, it wasn't this season. It's early in the season. They started off hot and then started. They were like 4-3 at one point, 4-4 maybe. Mm-hmm.
After being, I think, 4-0, and they looked fantastic, and then they had that little stumble. Yeah.
Hmm. So, it's no doubt they are the best team in that division, but I don't think it was as much of a cakewalk as many were predicting at the start of the season. Portland. There's just something about Portland that I enjoy. I think I like the fact that they've kept most of that team together. Mm-hmm. I like the fact that those rookies that they had so many rookies that they drafted that are becoming good now. I think the ownership and coaching kind of setup they've got is improving.
I
like the fact that they're an underdog team.
Yes, yes. Well, and Art Vandalay doesn't get talked about. He did a bang up job with the defense. He's a good defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. And done a fantastic mm-hmm. job. It's fun watching him there. I root for Gary Clem, you know, because he's a two season San Jose guy. Talked to him quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I love seeing Gary Clem have a good season.
On the subject of Portland's defense, just to finish this off.
Do you have stats?
I don't have stats, but I have a bit of a tease of an article that's gonna I'm working on that will be dropping. Maybe after the championship game, I'm not sure.
Okay.
And basically, the idea of the article is what if there was an all-pro team or a Pro Bowl team for every division? So it's an all-divisional team. And kind of figuring out who would be on that all-divisional team and then discussing who would win, which has got the best division based on these players. And who would have the best all-divisional team. And
That'll be a cool article.
I've chosen it based on the regular season. I haven't included the playoffs.
Okay.
I've chosen it based on the regular season because they're the easiest stats to track as well. And looking at the Pacific Division, the majority of that is Portland.
Wow.
Across the board from the defensive line all the way to the back end. a lot of those players on that team are Portland. And I think, Vancouver have got the most individual players on their all-divisional team, and then Portland are next. They've got more than LA and San Diego. Now, again, this is just my opinion, but it's based on the performances that they've made. But then you contrast that with Portland's offense. Now, it's obviously going to be tough for them to get on an all-divisional team offense because Vancouver is in that division.
Yeah.
But they've got one player, basically.
Zeke.
So I'm not going to reveal anything just yet.
Oh, okay.
I'm not going to reveal too much to the people.
All
right. What I will say is that most divisions have got a very similar amount of players between the teams. Mm. And you really also, you see the teams that have got great individual players but don't bring it together. Mm. Teams that have, Queen City have got the most on that roster, on the all-division team in that division. They've got more than Baltimore, more than London, more than DC. Yet they've had such a poor season.
Wow.
So it just shows that there's real good individual talent on that team, or there was, before they cleaned house. Yet they just didn't bring it together. They didn't gel for whatever reason. Anyway, little article tease there for everyone.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. It's good.
I think there's a game we haven't covered yet.
I think so.
The upset, the big upset of Arizona beating Mexico City, who hadn't lost, I didn't know this, they hadn't lost all year, all season at home. They were undefeated at home and went in there and just snatched the playoffs away.
Yeah. Yeah. That was fun. I always root for Arizona unless they're playing us or they're playing you or pretty much that's it. So I love seeing that for them. And you know how much Eddie grinds, you know, he's the only one
scouting in the 24/7.
It was fun to see them pull that off. You know, no disrespect to Mexico City, but you just like seeing the underdog win once in a while, so that was pretty cool.
Really appreciate seeing a team that's not expected to win go out and just in that manner as well, a narrow victory. Mm-hmm. And they played really well.
What was it, 24-21? Yeah,
24-21.
Pretty well played game between the two of them too. It wasn't.
Yeah, I think both teams were decent.
Yeah.
And one thing that I said this in chat, and I think it got a bit misconstrued, so I'm going to clarify it. I said something like, "See how good Arizona can be when they don't throw interceptions or they don't make turnovers." Now, what I meant by that was how well they were playing. They're a great team. And when the interception bug leaves, they can beat anyone.
Yes.
I didn't mean to throw any shade on AJ or anyone like that. That wasn't really my intention. They played a really good game. They didn't. I think she might have threw one pick. I'm not sure. Either way. I mean, I can double check the stats now. But either way, they had a much more, I guess, controlled game. And I know you might say, they only scored 24 points, but I mean, this is 24 points on the road against Mexico City, who have not lost on the at home yet. Mm-hmm. So, and it's what they needed. DJ Moses was used very well. it says, according to this, AJ threw one pass touchdown and no interceptions. So,
okay,
even better.
Yeah.
And I mean, the receivers they've got in Arizona are an absolute. The Hans brothers are absolute weapons.
And their tight end had a very nice game in that one too.
TJ Punk had that big catch up the middle. That play seems unstoppable. I've seen it used a couple of times. The defense was much better than it has been for the rest of the season. I think, weirdly, I don't know if you read my playoff prediction article that came out about an hour before the playoffs happened.
Oh yeah, I saw it.
I got everyone right.
Oh,
someone mentioned it in the general chat, and I put it together quite quickly and put it out there. And
you had a feeling about Arizona, huh?
Well, I mean, if you don't mind, I will read you the description.
Yeah, go for it.
My prediction. So I predicted the entire playoffs, but I didn't focus just on the wild card round. But let me just find it now. I'll be 1 second. So just to toot my own horn a little bit.
Go for it.
So I'll read you Mexico City's and I'll read you Arizona's. So Mexico City. Prediction. The Aztecs have made it to the playoffs once again, where they will face the 6-6 Arizona Scorpions. Unfortunately, this is as far as the Aztecs will go as they become the victims of an upset in the wild card round. I mean, that is exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty good.
The Arizona one, I'm pretty sure this is very similar. The Scorpions come into the playoff bracket with limited expectations, but surprised most in the community on wildcard Saturday with a win at Mexico City. And then I've said that their brave run will end as they at the quarterfinal stage, as their propensity for turnovers and poor pass defense catches up with them against Denver. Because just previewing that game, I don't think Arizona are going to repeat that against Denver. I think Denver are one of those teams where if they're better than you, they're better than you. And I think Denver are a better team at the minute than Arizona.
Right, right. Yeah, Denver's got a way of making you be your worst version of they make you your worst version of yourself whenever you play them. Let's do that. So they're going to be playing Denver.
Mm-hmm.
We've covered all the games that happened.
Talk a little bit. We talked about the previews of the other games apart from this one, and then I think we were just going to predict them, weren't we, as well?
Yeah. They've got that game. I don't think either one of us would say that Arizona can't give Denver a game.
No.
It's just that because again, fantastic roster, good players there, but it is that matter. Mm-hmm. If Denver were to have an uncharacteristically sloppy game, hey, who knows? But that key word, uncharacteristically. It weighs really heavy on that outcome, and so I'd be pretty surprised to see that happen.
I think I can even see Arizona being ahead for a portion, maybe in the first half. I can see him being ahead even at the half. I can see Arizona being ahead at halftime, but that grinding kind of the thing with Denver, they're not like Sioux Falls who will just pound the run at you. They're not. They can do that if they want to, but having seen that game against us in week 12, it showed me that if they want to pass the ball on you, they will pass the ball on you.
Yeah.
And they will tear you apart with Miller's a better quarterback than people give him credit. They think he's not as good because they think he rides off of Chesney, but I think legitimately Miller can say he's one of the better quarterbacks in the SFL. Yeah. Giacomo Jones is a good receiver. Bryce Battles is a good receiver. I forget the name of the other one.
Quintero. The rookie.
Riley Quintero was the best rookie receiver to come out of the draft at the time, anyway.
The tight end is very, very solid, very effective. All of their offensive weapons can give you something. Yeah.
And when you look at Arizona's pass defense, which has struggled, it's not been a bend and break. It's been a break pass defense. I think Denver will just be able to score too many points. I think Arizona can score on Denver, but I think Denver will just – I can see Denver putting up at least 35.
There's an inevitability just in that just inexorable grind from Denver. You know, like you said, you'll see I'm thinking, for example, of the Charleston game last season where it was just like just a couple of – they're banging heads and grinding. And then all of a sudden, whoop, they go down the sidelines and break the game open. And we've seen that too many times with Denver,
Definitely. And it sounds like I'm knocking Arizona. That's not a knock against Arizona. I mean, Denver went 11-1. They've only one team, which was Houston, when they went on that kind of crazy 3-game run where Houston looked the best team in the league. Only Houston have beaten them. So. I think they can come close. I can see it being something like 35-27, 35-26 maybe. Mm-hmm. But I just think Denver will outlast the Scorpions in that one.
I think so. Yeah, if you're going to twitch my arm and make me bet on it, that's the way I go.
Okay, so we just make some quick fire predictions before we talk about the other league that's running at the same time as this.
Okay.
So who do you? We've both just chosen Denver to beat Arizona, I presume.
Next up, how about you guys in Florida?
Okay,
that's not fair. You got to pick your team, but
I do. However, in my playoff prediction, which is partly me trying to be a fair and impartial beat writer, if I was you, or if I was the general population, I would probably pick Florida. Well, but obviously, I'm going to pick Vegas because, you know, they're my team, and I believe we can win. I do believe we can win and we can cause them some problems. But if I was a betting man who wasn't attached to either of these teams, I would probably go with Florida. Right. Just because I think out of all the teams other than Vegas who are going to win it all, I think Florida are my bet to win it all.
Mm-hmm.
So I hear you. I would have to go with them.
Well, and interestingly enough, I completely agree with you, and yet there's a little piece here.
It's just something, yeah.
Well, there's something, and part of it is that Ron Cochran's been very good the last 3-4 games. Not really a surprise. Cochran's a legend. Mm-hmm. He's a good player, but I have this just nagging feeling he's due for a 4-interception game, you know, or a 3-interception game.
Yeah.
And if that happens, because you guys have become in some ways what Vancouver. What I always say about Vancouver, I say they're a volume offense, right? They, mm-hmm. The more chances you get them, the more opportunities they have to score, the more opportunities they have to get on a sick run, and it's kind of the same with you guys. So if that happens, and I like I say, this nagging feeling that he's due for it. There's no science behind that. It's just a feeling.
It's a gut.
Yeah. Thing. If it doesn't happen. It's Florida. They're really good. And so
I can
see that. But I'm actually gonna hang my hat, so to speak, on my gut, and I think this is the one that's primed for it.
This is the upset of the round, do you think?
I think so. Obviously I'm not betting any money on it, so that's easy to say. But I just have that feeling. But it completely contingent on that uncharacteristically sloppy game that you don't, you know. I'm just like, well, he's due. That's all I'm saying. Or he's due.
Yeah.
And
I think because it's interesting. We've been talking in the locker room and stuff. And one thing we have going into this game is that Florida have played Vancouver this season and they beat them fairly handily. But that's the only team they've played that's anything like Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
I think the way we play offense, especially, is different. It's fairly different to a lot of the teams in this league. You know, there aren't not every team in the league are going to throw that Mason Kirby pass.
Right.
He had the highest yards per reception in the entire SFL this season. Doug Britton from the third receiver spot made 100 yards in the last game. We only hit him 6 times, but he was hitting him deep. Scott Johnson he seems to only do big plays or make that 10 yards that you need it on third down. That's the main thing going in, is that I think Florida are masters of the 25-13 win, the 27-16 victory, winning by 10 points and stifling the other team without needing to score that many yourself. If we can get Florida into a game where it's 30 points plus, then that's our best chance. I don't think we have a much less of a chance of winning a 16-15 grind it out kind of game. In that case, I think that's fairly damning for us. But I think if we can get them into a high scoring affair, then I think we've got a much better chance of causing the upset. And I think most people will go for Florida, and like the who you got will look so lopsided it's untrue, but I think it will be a close game.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think it's going to be a close game.
Yeah, I think so.
I think Florida And I mean, I could be wrong on this, but out of the teams coming through, I think Florida would have preferred a couple of the other teams apart from instead of Vegas.
Could be, yeah. You're a unique challenge.
Well, I don't want to go that far, but
I didn't say you were challenged. I said
you were... some of us are. Some of us are in Vegas. We're a bit challenged in some ways. So we'll leave your game till last. We'll go to Vancouver and Vancouver-Fort Worth. We've briefly touched on now.
We predictions.
Predictions.
I'm going to go Vancouver. I think Pepper is due for one of those, you know, gajillion yards with no interception games. Not that he has been bad. You know, I said Cochran's been good for the last few stretches, and so I feel like he's due for a bad one. Pepper hasn't been that bad of late, but I think he's due for one of those. And plus, I think the added element of the Robert Redford possibly going for 150, I'm going to pick them. I think I said before in a similar situation like this is that if it becomes a shootout, as good as their offense has become, I don't see Florida or I don't see Fort Worth being able to engage in a shootout. They had a shootout with us and lost, right?
And you're not Vancouver.
It's not their game. We're not Vancouver. Exactly. So in that game, in fact, we had a couple of sloppy moments, although offensively pretty good. So that's my thought there, I think. And it's, not big surprise. It comes down to turnovers. Vancouver didn't have turnovers. I think they win it. Like we said earlier, it could still be a shootout, but it doesn't feel like that. It feels like one team's going to bash the other one in this one. So that's my prediction there.
I'm going to refer to my article again because it kind of marries up quite well.
Okay.
So I'm going to agree with you. I think Vancouver will pull it out. I think so. In my article, I've put that in the quarterfinals, Vancouver's high-powered offense carries them through the quarterfinal match with flying colors. So I think matched with what I say about Fort Worth, which is that they will advance to the quarterfinals where their one-dimensional defensive style comes back to bite them against an elite team who can put over 30-plus on their style of defense. Mm-hmm. That team is Vancouver. That team, Vancouver can put 30-plus on Fort Worth if they turn it on. So I think Vancouver are the ones that I'm going to put my money, well, my fake money on.
Right. Yeah. Yep. So is it just us and Baltimore left on the predictions?
You and Baltimore, yeah.
Okay. Well, yes, obviously my heart says Lone Star because, you know, go Glory. Trying to set that aside, it comes down to, like we said before, I don't think we can be as sloppy as we were with Jacksonville. I think that's going to have to change. I think our defensive performance against Jacksonville, while I feel like we got pretty good defense, as you touched on, the rush defense doesn't matter as much. And we need some turnovers. We need a repeat of Jacksonville. We need turnovers. And even less sloppiness on offense. And I'm going to predict, yes, that we can do that. I have faith in Greg Soto and Charles to put together the plan and get us there and get us further than we're already further than we together have ever been in the playoffs because we got the playoff last year. But we lost in the first round. I think the party's not going to end this week. And it's impossible for me to separate my bias from that, I understand.
So, Coach, it's well documented that you're very supportive of me and my team in Vegas. And, you know, you usually build us up rather than knock us down. You give us our props. You predicted us to do well this season, which has rang true. You stuck with us when we were 2-4. So his response to you doing all that, I am going to pick Baltimore to beat you in the quarterfinals.
I kind of saw that coming. It's not me. It's not me. It's not you. It's me. You're breaking up with me.
I think so. Lone Star over the last few weeks have just, I don't know, found this, just this, discovered a way to win. No matter the circumstances, they just, the fact that you guys got to the playoffs in the first place with those two victories was crazy in itself.
Mm-hmm. Well, you yourself said it. We were 3 points from being 5-7.
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
Technically 5 points because they would that would have.
Touché. Touché.
But either way, it's still less than the touchdown.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that kind of will carry through into this game, but also Baltimore have a way of winning. They just do. They just see the fact that they need to win and they just do. Like, they have games where they don't play well and then they will lose. But then, like that DC game, and you know, some people might say, oh, it's only DC. I'm sorry, but DC have been bloody good this season. Mm-hmm. They haven't lost games by much. That last play with 1 second left to beat DC on the road to secure a bye, that's just Baltimore all over. They did the same against Charleston last season where they were just down and out and they came back to win 33-30 and somehow in the fourth. And
they didn't roll into the playoffs last season as the favorite.
No.
So they've been here before.
Yeah. And as much as Lone Star have been here before, this is, yeah, I think you guys have, didn't you guys crash out the first hurdle last time?
Yeah, we lost to Florida in the first
that
round.
That crazy Florida game. So... So as much as both teams have shown a maturity at the end of each the end of games, especially when it's tight, I just think Baltimore, with the home field advantage, with, and I know it's not as heavy of a home field advantage this season, but this, I think this is stat. I bet if you looked at the stats, it's still slightly there. Mm-hmm. They'll scrape it. They will scrape through by less. It'll be less than a touchdown, I think, and I think it might even be like a field goal difference or something like that. Mm-hmm. One of those situations where they either get a last-minute field goal to win the game or Lone Star driving down by two and just can't quite make it. You know what I mean? It's going to be one of those games. So I think with that, Baltimore will just about advance and scrape through.
I can see it. I can see it. Like I said, my bias, I wasn't able to completely separate my Lone Star bias. I couldn't bring myself to say it. But I agree. I think all of those things are in place. And as I said, we need as many, I feel like we need as many turnovers as Jacksonville gave us with fewer of our own. And that's, we're asking quite a bit mm-hmm. with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, and you can do it. Jack Wigmore throws a lot of picks, so you know, it's doable. He also throws some touchdowns as well. So
it is. It is. Well, no, it 100%, like we said, Baltimore's in virtually the same situation they were last season. You know, not the number one team going into the playoff. They had to go to Denver and beat them. I mean, they're actually a little bit better off than they were going in last season because they've got home field. So, you wouldn't never bet against a defending champion. Until they lose. So, all right. Well, we're in the books. It's recorded. It's official. How about those minor leaguers?
Those hungry minor leaguers who were, I guess, beavering away down at the down in the SFLM. I think it was an exciting weekend for them. Mm-hmm. It was Friday. Friday was an exciting day for them because, you know, there is nothing beats that feeling of first seeing your player out on the field.
First time, it is.
My first game, we got thrashed by Atlanta, and I was still really happy.
Were you? You're nice.
It was really good just to see, and it was a lot more. It was a lot less of a drawn out process back then as well. So, you know, the build up to this and the fact that they've had to progress and they've been, you know, kind of gelling with the team and the SFLM general chat is fairly busier than the general chat in the SFL, I think, sometimes. So, you know, it's in.
There's
it's,
some characters in there too. There's some real characters in that group.
Yeah, this league has a unique way of just finding the most interesting people that you could in a community, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it does.
Just bringing them all together. Yeah, it was great. And two close games, two absolute blowouts.
Yep.
I started watching the Lexington game, and to be honest, I thought Birmingham would win, but then I realised that Lexington is basically Annapolis's roster from last season. So, and Annapolis nearly made the playoffs, and they made the play. I'm pretty sure they made the playoffs the previous season, in season one. So, you know, Lexington have inherited a pretty good roster, and fair play to them, 25-0.
That was defensively a very dominant game.
That is dominance. And the Lexington benefited greatly from the fact that I'm pretty sure they have, they've got Bailey O'Shaughnessy at running back, who's a second-year player. Good. I think second season players are going to play a huge part this year.
I think so, too. Huge. Because they're on legendary setting as well, right? So, and I really think the attributes play even more of a factor. I've been saying that all season. The beginning of the season for Lone Star, looking at a couple of things like, oh crap, you know, we're that low on run coverage. Oh my God, you know. So there's things like that. Those second year guys have an opportunity. For our game, Doug Spelling showed some flashes. You were like, boy, that could be a real connection this season. The second year player, and I think we've got a couple. Jimmy Hadrid, second year, our quarterback, second year. He was with a different team, but he's a second year quarterback. It was interesting. And the gameplay was – I felt like the gameplay – I'm going to be honest. I'm going to admit something right here. It's really – it can be very frustrating game planning for the SFLM when you've been game planning for the SFL, because you really see the builds make a difference. Like early on last season, I remember, and I wasn't doing the offense. I haven't been really game planning for two seasons. I've handed it over to guys to give them an opportunity to develop, and I'm trying to help the players get ready to get drafted. But God, we had some plays last season early on when Colin hadn't progressed a whole lot yet, and you got a guy wide open, and he throws this thing. It looks like he's throwing a freaking balloon. The ball just like flutters. And you're going, how in the heck are you supposed to, you know? Well, watching all the games this season, it looked much closer, or this first weekend, it looked much closer to the quality of play that you get with the SFL.
I mean, it still does sometimes look like they're playing on sand rather than
turf. Oh, yeah. Slower, less. Yeah, yeah.
But, you look at players like Bailey, who 31 attempts, 135 yards, and then still managed to crack off 90 yards receiving. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they...
GP Wells had a hell of a game.
They're nearly SFL ready already.
Yes.
So I think the key for game planning, this is the game plan. The game planning for the SFLM is very simple. I think it's much more similar to how the SFL used to be. Mm-hmm. When you could have 12 players on a roster and that was it. Mm. I think it's where to utilize those real star players who've got that star quality, and that's going to be the difference between winning and losing. I mean, Birmingham's offense, man. I mean, Birmingham got 53 total yards.
Yeah. Yeah. 50, Doug, you see that? 53
ruining the show, man.
When I saw that, I just went, what? I mean, that was wow.
53. I didn't even know that until now, but I just assumed they had low yards. And then three first downs.
Yep.
First downs. That is only in the SFLM. That does not happen in the SFL. Mm. Which is kind of why I like the league. I quite like watching SFLM games. I feel like
it's fun. It's fun. And without the goofy balloon balls and stuff like that, It has a quality to it. It's, you're watching it. It's like in real life. Sure, I'll watch an NFL game, but I like watching college games. I like watching all levels of college game. There's fun mm-hmm. with high school games, obviously. 21 years as a high school coach. I love high school football, blah, blah, blah. All of that stuff. I like all levels, but there's a difference. There's a difference to what you're seeing. SML, I'm the same thing.
As much as there's a almost like a raw beauty about the balloon pass, there's also a raw beauty about the fact that the guy, the defender who gets there, drops it and doesn't have the hands to catch it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You just know that even if you're throwing that pass and you think, oh, in the SFL, that's getting intercepted straight away. In the SFLM, it's still a lottery about whether it's actually going to end up in the hands of a receiver or not.
You can see the ref over there rolling the dice to see if he gets to hold on to it.
Hits see the ref right. rolling his the ref yeah. rolling his eyes thinking, Christ, when's this over?
Hits him right in the beak and he still drops it. Yeah, it's fun, and I think it's going to be interesting. It feels like luck watching those games. It doesn't feel, and I could be wrong, that you're going to have somebody just run away with the SFLM this year. I think it could be a dogfight all season long.
I think so. How do you assess? Well, I didn't really watch the San Jose game. I saw parts of it, but I didn't really, not to give an accurate assessment. You lost 17-10, which is against the previous champions, isn't a bad result, really.
No. And they did a good job. Colin did a great job with the defense. The defense was very good, and I thought our offense got a little bit snake bit. We had a lot of penalties. I don't think I've seen that many penalties in a game, period, the whole time I've been in the league. Just brutal penalties. Two personal 15-yard personal foul penalties against the same guy.
Poor dude.
Yeah. Not his fault, right? One of them, he hits a guy on the right, he's committed, he's making the play, guy goes out of bounds, he hits him 15 yards late hit, and you're just like, ugh. So there was a lot of stuff like that. Jimmy Hazard had a fine game. Like I said, Doug Spelling, you saw things, you're like, ooh, Doug Spelling and Joe and Doug are going to have some fun this season. So, obviously a loss. The guys were very, very positive, because you could tell we competed. It wasn't one of those things where you're like, well, crap, what are we going to do? We suck.
Yeah.
You like that at all. So the locker room, pretty enthusiastic. So I feel good about their chances. Like I said, I think Art and Colin are going to do a fantastic job with the playbooks this season. And, it's funny. I never come out of a loss feeling good, but I didn't feel as bad coming out of that as you do sometimes. So.
I suppose the one real good game that was, again, even closer was the Salt Lake Madison game, 27-30, which I watched most of, and it's as much as I'm, because I'm attached to Salt Lake, so obviously I've got an attachment to them.
Oh, sure.
I think both teams played fairly well. I think Madison probably just did edge it. I think they probably did deserve to win. And I don't remember it being that bad, but it says here that our running back had 9 carries for 8 yards, which...
Really?
Yeah, it didn't seem that bad when I watched the game.
Isn't Twinsco doing your offense?
So Mike does the offense.
Interesting.
And then, I think Chad Neville's does the defense.
Okay, that's right. So apparently, if Mike doesn't have Reggie Streeter, he doesn't think running back.
No, I mean Brooke Beasel. She's a second year player. So.
Oh, is she? Okay.
But I think Salt Lake City and Madison looks like two teams that will be some of the better teams in the league. They both looked like they can do something.
Yeah.
By the way,
I'm teasing, well, Mike. Don't be mad. I'm teasing.
Mike's currently throwing his laptop or phone across the room. Madison looked, I mean, they've got a second year QB. Essex Denner Bowler is a beast of a receiver, also with a great name.
Yeah.
I mean, 13 catches for 151 yards and 2 touchdowns, so
Cool.
You've got the running backs. I think the running backs the one of the sort of only first year players they've got. So, sorry, I'm just getting there, getting myself a brew.
I don't blame you.
Delivered to me as well. It's like a Starbucks.
I like that.
So yeah. Also, but they actually won that game with an injury as well. Justice Blackwell, who again, great name. He got injured very early on, so they had to contend with only one star wide receiver, which is probably why Essex Denebola was so dominant.
That's right.
And that's against Jared Brody, who is maxed out stats wise.
Second year DB, right?
We've been like racking our brains trying to think where can we progress this dude, because he's just like completely maxed. We've been putting progression into progression into aggression for the last 3 weeks just because there's nothing else.
That's funny. That's funny.
But yeah, the I think it was a fun weekend, and I'm intrigued to see the SFLM is one of those leagues where each week it just improves.
Yeah,
the level of play improves by the time the championship game comes around. It's not too far removed from an SFL game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So. You know, a question popped to my head that I wanted to get your take on about that. So,
yes.
The last couple seasons prior, when I'd be talking to guys and like, oh man, I hope, I had a terrible game. I hope that doesn't hurt my draft status. I'm like, dude, people aren't even watching. I'm like, some of these owners aren't even watching.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about you. And I may have been too. It's the same message I tell JV players in high school. Like, nobody cares about your performance, about your team performance, except for you. Okay. And I've been telling them, yes, a bad build could hurt your chances, but that's, and again, public service announcement here, folks. It's still only partly your player that's getting you drafted. It's what you bring to the team in terms of, even more so nowadays, in terms of scouting, social media skills, video skills, whatever.
Yeah.
Having said all that, with the changes to the minors, do you think that there may be some guys that you're looking at them for their performance in the minors and you're going, boy, that's a devastatingly good build. We need that. We're picking that guy, even if we don't really know what else he brings to the team. Do you think that's going to change for anyone at all this upcoming season? You're a GM, right? I mean, you're looking, and we've had these conversations many times. You're looking at the person more than the player. And we do the same at Lone Star. Yes, we want a good build, but we want somebody that in our locker room, we love him. We love being in the locker room with him. But do you think that player on the field piece might take on a little bit more importance with the way things are going?
I think like anything, there's a number of factors to answer that question. I think first of all, before you even think about who you want to get, you see who you're losing and where you need to fill. Mm-hmm. You see kind of. Whether, say you were losing a wide receiver, are you losing a wide receiver that's a third string wide receiver, or are you losing a wide receiver that's a top number one beast of 100 value wide receiver? Mm-hmm. You look at the kind of what, if you are losing anything, you look at what you are losing, and then you sort of address what you're going to bring on. Now, in Vegas, we have two owners, one of whom was the DC, who won't be next season. Well, I won't make that announcement yet. I won't make the announcement who's replacing him yet. One of whom who does the offense with Bovine. We've got Bovine, who is obviously a coach and a player. We've got myself as GM. Rhett Sawyer is my assistant GM. Doug Britton is the DPP, who does all the progression for everyone. Jess is the director of communications, or whatever. Yeah, I think that's his title. Scott and Doug do a great job scouting. We are set staffing wise.
Okay. So that means that's less of a factor. Now maybe you're just character in the build and the need.
So you look at areas of not just yeah, you look at basically areas that you can improve. So there's areas that can be improved in Vegas. We can improve our, you can always improve your locker room activity. Because why would you not want to get someone in who's going to add to your locker room and add a bit of excitement and you know, contribute that way? Again, you've got the standard things like looking for someone who's reliable, and you presume if someone's got to that build, they're going to be a reliable progression. You look at what they're going to bring to your locker room, and then if you feel like your locker room is set and you don't necessarily need someone to come in and be in every day talking with everyone, and your staff is set and you don't necessarily need anyone to say, yeah, I will commit to being your defensive coordinator or whatever, then it does take more importance, I guess, as well as obviously what you're replacing with that player. And then there's some players who are so dominant on the field that they do, or that almost does overtake who they are. So, for instance, if I'm thinking of one out of the top of my head, Riley Quintero. Now, I don't know Riley. I don't know how active he is. I don't know whether he contributes much in the locker room. If he does, great. But he was so dominant last season that I can see Denver being charmed by that.
Oh, yeah.
Without him needing to contribute any further, just to get drafted. So, yeah, I think... And as player builds this season are across the board a bit higher for those second tier players, so those second season players, maybe it will take on more of a significance, because the build does have some importance. It's not like it's the be all and end all, but it's the put it this way: I do the defensive progression for Salt Lake, and I progress them to be as draftable as possible.
Okay.
The rest is up to them. You could be the best off the field person ever, and you might get drafted number one, whatever, but there might be someone who's nowhere near as active as you off the field. Yeah, if they've got such a better build that's not broken, that there will be a moment where the GM weighs that up.
Sure.
So, if people are thinking that the build isn't that important or anything, then I think that's a bit of a false thought, really.
Yeah.
So that was a very long-winded way of answering that question. I don't know if people realize how much work good GMs put into the off-season and how much goes into just picking that one player or those three players or whatever it is. A lot of work goes in, a lot of like figuring out, a lot of changing of minds.
Yep.
A lot of adapting your plan. I love doing it, and I think it's one of the most interesting positions in the league, because as a coordinator, I feel like you see the product on the field. You can kind of see what people are trying to do and how they're trying to strategize and what their goals are in terms of with their game plan. With the GM, it's not as clear to everyone how they affect the team. And I think it's something that I would love to kind of, whether you could have a show where you get like four GMs together just to discuss what it is to be a GM and kind of explain the inner workings of it and like how everyone's got different strategies for things and stuff.
Yeah, I think that'd be a good show. I remember Axis had like four original owners, old guard owners on there. Interesting. I think something like that. GMs.
Yeah.
All walks. Bring in four scouts and talk to them, have them talk about what they do and give people a win. Bring in four coaches, bring in four GMs. That'd be fun.
By the way, when I said that Vegas' staffing is set, scouts are always important. So we could always do with more scouts. I think anyone would happily say that.
That's what we tell to our rookies too. We're like, hey, if it's not your cup of tea, that's fine. There's other ways. But if you're a scout, there's always a place for you somewhere.
And having said that, with league rules on stats, if you're willing to do stats, then you will make yourself more attractive.
Oh, yeah. Good point there. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think the shortest answer to your original question is yes.
All right. Thanks for narrowing it down. Well, I know. I think it's good. I mean, you just, any rookies listening to this, you just got to hear a GM tell you some of his process. You got to hear somebody, you know, tell you what they're looking for. He's not the only one that thinks that way. And so, you know, good advice.
And I mean, but then you look at Queen City, just revamped the whole staff. They might be looking for guys who want to fill those roles.
Yeah.
Their priorities will be totally different than mine. So, yeah, it's it just, I don't know. There's not really one set of advice I could give to anyone. Mm-hmm. You know, don't just, I guess you, as a rookie, you have to be reactionary to who you're talking to. So if you're talking to me, from what I've just said, you need to kind of like, if you know, be true to yourself in the sense that no, I want a staffing position and there's no opportunities there, so I might steer away from that team. Whereas if you're talking to QCC, think, oh, there is opportunities there, I'm going to make myself more open. Mm-hmm. You know, as a rookie, you don't have much choice, but you have some.
Yeah.
You can choose how you want to interact with GMs and owners and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, without going on about it too much, because I could probably go on about it for the next hour.
Yeah,
you just be reactionary and try and react in the best way. Try and those situations you have with GMs and those situations you have to conduct yourself in general chat and in the locker room. Just be a good dude or a good girl.
I'm here for that. Yeah, that's not a job that I want. I like being part of, at Lone Star, I've been, you know, part of the equation. Charles and I would talk about stuff. Dave, you know, Dave sometimes will say, tell me who you want and I'll go get them. But that's shortchanging what Dave does. Dave did identify some people for us, some targets. We knew what we needed, you know, going into the draft. Well, going into the draft, we knew it was Deuce. We were going to get up a third wide receiver. That was an easy one. The only anxiety was he going to get picked by someone? But we knew, you know, okay, we're talking about, we need a DB. Is he going to be a free safety or what? All right, well, so Dave did a lot of the legwork to get to know these guys. I did have some input because I had Evan at San Jose, and I was like, Evan, you need to talk to Evan. Evan's a wonderful guy. I love Evan. I think he'd be fantastic at Lone Star. Dave confirmed it. Boom, away we go. But that's about
We were talking to him as well, actually, quite
happy. Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, he's a fantastic guy. But that's as far as I don't want any more of that of my fingers in the GM pie. I think I might get stressed out with some of the uncertainties of it.
Tell you what, I love it. I do. I absolutely love it.
No, you're made for it. I know. I'm watching
the kind of the wheeling and the dealing, and the uncertainty is kind of part of the game, part of the deal, part of the attraction.
Yeah.
I just thrive off it. The off season, in many ways, the off season is my favorite time.
Oh, I believe it. I was going to ask you that.
The speed that I type when I'm speaking to a free agent or a rookie, and I like them. I feel like they're getting on with me, and there's a chance that you could get that verbal commitment or that signature. Yeah. Then, there's been times where I've been speaking to like five or six free agents, and especially when Vegas needed a lot of players.
Uh-huh.
It was just, I got so excited doing that. I'd stay up. I know I stay up late anyway, but I stay up so late just to speak to these people and really, you know, get on with them. And I've got a funny feeling that Lone Star you guys are gonna have a kicker next season. I'm gonna make that prediction now because the rumor is, and this is avoiding anything because obviously if players are testing free agency, we publicly mm-hmm. know anyway. Mm-hmm. The rumor is that Matt Fenech is becoming a free agent.
Right. Well, that makes that would certainly make some sense, and we're going to have some openings.
Because you guys haven't carried a star kicker, have you, this season?
No. We had Wally last season, and in the shuffling of things to bring in Greg, Wally said he'd drop his player so that we could have Greg. Charles didn't need to drop his cornerback, but he felt like if Wally didn't have one, you know, he didn't feel like it was fair, so he dropped his. We brought in Bo. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then another one of our players left, and we drafted, you know, so it was basically what two of our players left from last season. Replaced one of them with Greg. Wally dropped his, so we could have a third wide receiver this season. The other one that left, we drafted Evan to replace, and that was the move. I would love. I think we did fine. We put some of those generic points on the kicker. And he was more accurate than just a plate straight generic had been in the
season. Yeah.
But the kickoffs were really, you know, Wally's booming it into the end zone. Mm-hmm. Our guys, you know, they're starting on the 35.
So
I'd love to see Lone throw with the kicker.
It's interesting with that I think one thing that's helped us a lot this season is having that star punter.
Dustin, yeah.
When you're in a tight spot and you need some yardage because you've got a three and out on your own 20-yard line or something, you can boom it to like the opposition 30. Mm-hmm. And the way returns are in this league, being quite, you know, it's few and far between that you see a big return. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just think that it's helped so much.
I can see that. Yeah, I can see that. And the other component, and we had it happen a couple of times, and then got lucky and got a turnover. The two times I'm thinking of, we were backed up, weren't really able to get a first down. We punt, and they've already got the ball in scoring positions. Mm-hmm. That's brutal. That is brutal.
Yeah.
So I can see that. Hey, eventually we're going to have roster spots. You know, we're going to have roster expansion at some point. We'll be able to have some of those things, I think. I'm sitting here advocating for kickers. I agree punters are good. And I always make a crack that kickers and punters aren't real football players because I can just go over to the soccer field and find somebody to fill those positions. That's just to give buddies like Jess a hard time and Wally a hard time.
Tell you what, you do not need to say that to give Jess a hard time. You just call him Otis Bordeaux when he goes absolutely crazy.
That's right. I forgot about that. Otis Bordeaux.
Yeah. And to be honest, it's everyone says Boudreaux apart from and I will call him out on it, Andy. And Andy Hamilton, as much as I love his commentary, I really love his commentary, it always makes me laugh every time he says Otis Bordeaux, because I can just feel Jess's heat from across the Atlantic just at the fact there is names. And I still can't tell whether Andy's doing it on purpose or not.
Yeah.
because the analyst commentator has said Boudreaux, and then
he still says Bordeaux.
Bordeaux, yeah. So I don't know. It might be Andy trolling Jess a bit, but
maybe
it
could a little be
an innocent mistake. But either way, it does make me laugh.
It's hilarious either way.
Yeah. Yeah. But I wouldn't mind that. I mean, Bordeaux's a lovely place.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's funny.
As we get near the end and wrapping up, I'll tell you that one of the things Charles and I would do, we used to be, we'd be like VCing almost daily as we're doing Sims or whatnot. And he'd be like, oh, I've got a new one. And he had some of the most ridiculous and yet hilarious. I still probably haven't laughed as hard in the last year as I did with some of these names. And I'm not going to say some of them because they'll turn it not PC. And I don't want to give away any of Charles' future plans. Yeah. But he'd come up with some goofy names. And it was like a game almost every day. We're like, you know, ripping off these names. They were hilarious.
Yeah, I remember... And when you can kind of add them into the spreadsheet and stuff with the generic names, I just decided, you know what, I'm going to do it and see if John doesn't notice and submits them, because some of them, they were just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, we did have one that got through. That our backup safety last season was Chris P. Bacon.
Yes, that was fantastic.
He made some fantastic plays, Chris P. did.
Yes.
Your
punter... I'm sorry, your punter.
Yeah.
And did you hear Cam in the game trying not to? He was trying to. He worked very hard.
McCrack.
McCrack. He made a point not to say it. Hey, God bless you, Cam. I know you listen to stuff. there was a slight pause as he made sure he said that the way he wanted to.
To be fair, I know someone who's because one of the classic ones is bend over, right?
Yep.
And I don't know if that's one over in the US, but there's a place in the UK called Dover. So bend over. I know someone called Ben Downward.
Really?
Yeah, Ben Downward, yeah. That's a real name. I went to school with a girl called Skywalker.
Your parents need to do better than that.
Skywalker, it's just some of the names that people call it are hilarious. Yep. But yeah, I did have a bit of fun with that one year. I can't really remember. It was a while ago now, bro. So I can't remember the names that I came up with, and I imagine most of them were probably a bit risque. I think one of the offensive linemen was called Chesty LaRue, or I can't remember.
Nice.
I don't know what we were planning to move on to on this topic, or whether we're just getting into ridiculousness now.
Well, it's sort of our trademark. We might as well kind of wrap this up. I will say, we definitely need to do it again next week. I'm moved. I'm getting settled. Let's just take this thing national, baby.
Maybe next week we won't have someone gate crashing as well and throwing up rude signs that nobody else will be able to see, putting me off my stride.
Well, frankly, I don't know. Maybe we ought to start doing these shows video. So we get the evidence.
Well, you need give me an hour to brush my hair and stuff, and then we can sort that out. Yeah,
Doug approves that idea. All right, so yeah, let's start wrapping this baby up. Tune in next week. We're going to talk about the next round of the playoffs. We'll talk about the rookies, kind of the same thing we're doing right now. We'll find some different topic to go off on a tangent on. Doug's pointing at himself. Apparently, he's going to be involved in some way. Oh yeah, he's going to be involved. So we'll have. Maybe we'll have an unhinged element to the next show.
I don't think the listeners can handle that.
Well, they're going to have to try.
It's going to be like one of these 24-hour challenges where we're just chatting for a whole day.
They're going to have to try. All right. This has been Coach's Corner. You're here with Slynn and Coach. Thanks for joining us. Good luck and God bless, my friends.